Hey, and welcome back to the Happy Million Show. Today, we have an amazing guest, Adam Hudson, for you to listen and to learn from. Adam is an amazing friend of mine, and I have the good fortune of hanging out with him, asking him deep questions. And honestly, he cried on this podcast when he was so fulfilled and filled with joy to share what it is that he has been able to do with and as a result of his financial success. He used to be what we would call a miserable millionaire, and he has things for you to hear and listen to, especially if you are in the search right now for creating financial freedom by doing things that truly and deeply matter in the world. He is a dear friend of mine. He is a man that you are going to listen to and learn from. Open up your heart, open up your mind, enjoy the show. Your life is about to change.
Welcome to the show that's redefining success for high achievers globally. This is where you come to hear from high achievers who are making bank, making love, making memories, and who are truly happy. And here's your host, Liz Benny.
Hey, Adam, it's Liz Benny back here, and we have an amazing person for you to listen to right now. Adam Hudson is in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm amazing. How are you doing, Liz? Lovely to see you.
Oh my gosh, I love the fact that you said I'm amazing. Do you know that that is quite literally one of the things that I say all the time, and I teach people and I train people to say that, because a lot of the times people go, oh, how are you? I'm good. No. So I always break it and say I'm amazing. So you were actually the first person ever in the history of ever to say I'm amazing. Well done, you.
Thank you. Well, it's genuine. I actually do feel amazing. I woke up this morning here on the beach. I've been in the ocean. I'm amazing. I'm loving life.
Oh, well, look, paint a picture for everyone. What is a day in the life of Adam Hudson right now?
I'm in a really purple patch in my life, Liz. Like, I'm coming up to my 50th birthday on Saturday. So this is being recorded on Wednesday. So I'm just a few days away from the big 5-0. And I've been an entrepreneur since I was 20. So I'm three decades into this self-directed insanity of entrepreneurship. And at first, my mission was to sort of turn up into 50 in the best shape of my life, which is kind of cliched. Then I had to get shoulder construction and all this other stuff. But I'm kind of glad that all happened, because now I want to turn up the most peaceful that I have in my life, because it's been stressful for three decades straight, and I'm just determined to end that going into my sixth decade on the planet. Yeah. So the day in the life now, I live, you know, right on the beach. Like, so this is my view out the window for those watching the pod on the YouTube or wherever this is being shown in video. So I live right on the beach. I get up in the morning, usually quite early. I'll start at 4:30 or 5, and I'll work till maybe 7, where I'm closest to dream state and totally undistracted and get my deep work done. And then I'll go on the balcony. I'll stretch for maybe half an hour in the sun. And then I'll go down to the beach and have a swim. And then I sort of get on with the rest of the day. And I usually don't take any meetings before 10 a.m., but my business today is running a podcast like what you do, and managing our family office portfolio company. So we've invested in a number of companies that I'm sort of providing the capital to, and then providing mentorship to all companies that I've got a fairly close touch with. So that's my life, and really enjoying it.
That's amazing. How's your wife?
She's wonderful. She's really good. Married, a year and a half ago, a year and a bit ago, over in New Zealand.
I don't know when I was married, but I did know that you got married in New Zealand. So
yeah, I got married in Waiheke Island, and had a beautiful day. But she's really good. She runs our nonprofit. So we have it's actually a charity now. It's just formally become a charity called loveheart.org. And so she takes people to Indonesia for blind tours. So we sponsor entire villages and do 200 or 300 blind surgeries at a time. We're doing 5 of those tours this year, and we'll see probably 1,000 to 1,500 blind people cured as a direct result of that work. So she runs that and looks after me and our little family of a son and a little dog.
Wow. So to everyone looking like outside in, You've got the financial side of your life sorted by the looks of things. You've got family sorted. You've got fulfillment sorted. And you're working on peace now. What are you striving towards other than, I know it's a big thing to say, other than peace, which is actually really
bad.
But where are you going? What is your hope and your vision for the next, 50 years of your life?
Yeah. So I want to sort of dispel what might be jumping into some people's minds is, peace means no business. Peace means winding down. No, they're not mutually exclusive. Peace and being an entrepreneur can coexist. Whereas for the longest time, I kind of was like, either I'm all just peaceful yoga on the beach, or I'm a full-on grinding entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And now I'm playing with the idea of actually being a really successful entrepreneur, but doing it easily and peacefully. But I've had to earn that right over many years of learning the lessons and so on. Yeah. So I'm still very driven, but driven in a different way. Like, I'm very determined not to be a CEO of any business, to mentor and grow a portfolio of companies that that are changing lives for the entrepreneurs that I'm working with. So we just started a company 33 days ago with two young guys.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I had the idea to connect the two guys together, and I said, I think you guys should do this, and you need some funding. So my business partner, Eric, and I will fund you guys if you come up with a good sort of idea and product suite, which they did. And in 33 days, we formed the business, opened a space, fitted a space out. They've done their first $20,000 in banked revenue in 33 days from actually meeting each other to forming the company, funding the company, fitting the space out and making sales. So it's hugely rewarding watching these young people come together, and the energy and intensity and the intellect and the passion and all those things that when I was in my early 20s, and being able to sit there and mentor them and just sort of, bump them along, and I don't really need to push them. I just need to guide them. And so, yeah, that's for me is really an exciting prospect of actually, how do you go to the next level of wealth and achievement, but do it in a different way. And I'm really excited about that journey. But it's a really nice, this journey, it's not driven by money principally. I'm out of a place in my life where it has to work or I'm broke and I'm living on the breadline. Like, I don't have to work. I'm very fortunate for that to be the case, but it's a very wonderful place to work from, and you kind of know that unless you really fuck it up, you're okay.
I'm so, firstly, massive congrats for all the decisions, the thoughts, the decision, like who you had to be to become who you are now, because a lot of people are reluctant to do the big things, to take the risks, to have the courage, to double down on themselves. Do you have any regrets in the last 30 years that if you could go back and just shift a couple of things around, would you?
I think there are things like, I wish I'd met my wife earlier, and I wish I'd been smart enough and evolved enough as a man to be ready at that time.
Yeah.
And honestly, we probably neither of us were ready to meet each other earlier in life. I wish I'd met her earlier, because if I had, I probably would have had kids with her. That's one thing I wish I'd had with her. And but then that just wasn't to be, and I wouldn't be who I am now. And I like who I am now, and I like where I am now, and I have a family now as well. Anyway, so it's that's maybe one thing. And there's obviously little things you've done along the way, some big things, just screw ups or relationships that you damaged, or things that you were when you weren't your best self or whatever that happened. But by and large, not really. I don't have a lot of regrets at all.
That's amazing. That's again, congrats. And I get the whole thing of wishing you'd met your wife sooner. I've actually cried a number of times because of how little time I feel like I have to live with Christy now. And I'm like, oh man, if we'd met. But again, exactly the same conversation, like, we wouldn't have been ready. It wasn't the right time. And accepting and allowing that to be the case is amazing. You used a word, Adam, that I absolutely love, and I want to quickly paint a bit of a backstory for you for a quick second. So I know that you've had times where you've taken a step back from your business, or where you've just gone and rejigged things and just taken a solid look at it and gone, what do I actually want the next phase to be? And often that takes a bit of a pause, if you have the courage to have the pause, to then go to the next level. And around a year and a half, 2 years ago, I took off from New Zealand and went to America. And I spent 2-3 months in America, kind of like that aimless wanderer, like ready to let go of everything if I needed to, but kind of there for the big aha. And I was looking for ease, more ease, not for things to be easy, because you didn't want things to be easy, but you said you were after more ease. Alongside that peace, it's just this sense of ease. And during this period of time, as I was searching for this word ease, like more ease, because I felt like I was being a little bit too clunky, and there was too much force, and there was too much, like, and there's a difference between forcing things that shouldn't be, as opposed to learning things that you need to learn to become. There's a key difference between those two, and discerning the difference between those two, of course, is very important. But there was a period of time when I was in America without Christy, and it got to the point one day where I was looking around Montana, beautiful Whitefish, Montana, and I just missed her. And I remember like sending her a message and saying to her, hey, I miss you. Maybe you could come over. And within 10 minutes of her seeing that message, the tickets were booked. And she was on her way over to Little Whitefish, Montana. And we were sitting in a coffee shop. And I said, how do you want life to feel? How do you want business to feel? And she said, I want it to be simple and feel simple and have ease. And I said, me too. But that's like, that was enough for me. And I'm getting to the point, getting to the question here in a second. And I said, I also want things to be love filled and fun. And then it was upon reflection of a friend that said, S-E-L-F, it sounds like you guys need to look after yourself in order to have more of what you want in life. And that's been the premise, like the whole couple of years after that, it's been about protecting myself, my simplicity, the ease, the love, and the fun, and making sure that is the filter through which we make business decisions and life decisions. So with that said, do you have a filter that you take things through in order for things to be okay, in order for it to be a hell yes, it must, do you have a filter along those lines?
Yeah, I think it's not structured into an acronym, but from listening to what you just said there, it sounds like you're making decisions from your heart space there, because it's all about how it feels, right? As opposed to your headspace, which is really interesting way of, it's a really interesting filter through which to put things, you know. We had somebody on our pod yesterday who was emotional intelligence coach, a woman. She was talking about this exact thing, about how we often respond to things from our head and not our heart, and then we get results we don't love. But that easeful part is big. So I for years I sort of have gone with the Warren Buffett principle of, do I like the person, do I trust the person, do I respect the person, when doing business partnerships. But it also kind of works in personal relationships as well. But yeah, it has to be, it has to fit with that overall guiding principle of, is this helping an entrepreneur? Are the customers at the end of the transaction happy to buy or sell, buy what you're selling, like authentically, it's solving a real world problem. And is this person that I'm dealing with going to make life easier for me or more complex for me, you know? I do have a filter in that sense. I suppose it would fit broadly into a very similar framework to what you're talking about. That old, when I was young, you kind of make things happen. And as you get older, you want to attract things. From what you're saying, you're sort of now getting yourselves right and attracting on that basis rather than forcing and pushing and making. And you sort of over time just come to know. Like if you look at the surf out here, the experienced surfers know when it's time just to sit out the back, and they know when to paddle, and they know when to just easily go over a wave. You know, they kind of tuned into the ocean, and they realize sometimes you just got to sit and wait. Sometimes you paddle like crazy, and sometimes you don't paddle out at all. And that just comes with experience, you know. And that's sort of what I'm getting to that point in my life where I'm able to sort of look out at the surf and sort of pick when is the right time to do what. And that's taken 30 years.
Oh my gosh. So if you could, and I love the fact that you're saying it's taken 30 years for you to become the person who can intuitively and just with wisdom make these decisions.
Hmm.
If there was a person listening and watching right now and they are struggling to get to $100,000 per month consistently, or just, and they know that they can, what might that block be for them that you, with your wisdom and experience, would be like, this is probably what's off over here? It's an overly simplistic question.
Yeah, it's in the context of business, so much of it is, you sort of said that if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no kind of thing before. Like, that's kind of a saying that's somewhere in the personal development vernacular. I don't know who said it or whatever. But it's kind of right. Like, right, like you get to this point where if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. And every yes needs to be defended by 1,000 no's. But so you got to choose your yeses carefully, because especially when you're time poor and maybe financially poor, when you're at the start of your entrepreneurial journey and trying to get to 100 grand a month in sales or profit or whatever the situation is in business, I find, and you know, I used to run a large training business, as you know, we used to teach people to sell products on Amazon. We had 17,000 customers who bought our program. So when you've owned an education program like that, you see a lot of people approaching the same task in very different ways. And then you see the people who succeed and you see the common traits. And it's really about, in business, being objective about the market, right? Like Alex Hormozi has a filter or a framework, because Alex acquires companies and Alex says, is it solving a real problem? Like, is there a starving crowd and a real problem? Number two, if there is a starving crowd and a real problem, can they afford the product or service that you sell? So it's no good having an amazing solution to a problem. Like, you might be the best resume writer in the world, but if all your customers are unemployed, they can't pay you. So you need to have the solve a real problem. They must be able to afford it at the price that you need to sell it at, be a respectable margin. Can you then reach them? So is there a way to access these people? So if you're selling a product for people of the mountains of Peru that aren't on the internet, it's no good. And then the fourth thing is it a growing market? And if it's not, if it's a declining market, you've got to be going forward at high speed constantly just to stay afloat. So you've got to have those four things. And where a lot of people go wrong is they solve problems that don't exist and get emotional about them. There's not like a big painful problem there. And then they take it very personally and the market rejects them. And they basically just haven't refined that thing of being completely objective. And the other thing they did is they tried to do it on their own. And that's why we always say to our students, get in a mastermind of people that are not you, that are outside of your head, then can test your assumptions against a framework objectively. And because there are a lot of dumbasses out there that are selling the right thing at the right time and solving a real problem, and despite being stupid, making a fortune, right? So that's what business is. It's not sitting around in a circle and being positive mindset or affirmations. It's product market fit. If you solve a real problem in a unique way that people really, really want, you know, you're going to be successful.
And that's pretty dang basic.
Yeah.
Do you think entrepreneurs naturally like to overcomplicate things to have the struggle of the journey? What do you think?
Sometimes I think some people are masochists. I'm like, why would you want to do that? Like, it's just such a bad idea. When you sit down and other things and you go, because people get emotional and they don't sit down and they don't know their numbers and they like, you have to know your numbers. Somebody asked me 2 days ago, who's the most important person when you're starting a business? I said, your bookkeeper. And then I'm like, what? What about the visionary who reads all the books? I'm like, dude, you need somebody to tell you whether or not, you're making or losing money. And you need to understand every line item in your business. And we coach people all the time in our coaching program. We sit there with their P&L and we see people and they've got all their revenue clumped together in one line item that their accountant gives them. And I say, well, where are you making money amongst these 25 products? And they're like, well, I don't know. I mean, this is just my turnover. I'm like, so you're telling me you don't know where the money's coming from on a product level basis? Like it's honestly common. So, you know, and then somebody contacted me the other day who was a student and they was like, oh, Dan Locke's doing this promotion. Should I buy this course off Dan? And we were like, well, what are you looking for? And they're like, well, I want to be successful. And I was like, well, can you read a financial statement? Do you know what how P&L actually works and how it interacts with a balance sheet? And they're like, not really. I said, go on YouTube and forget Dan for a minute, or forget all the internet marketing people for a minute, and learn to read a financial statement. That's what you need to learn first. Then maybe go and do Dan. It's not a slight on Dan or anybody else in the industry. It's just if you can't read a financial statement, you're not in the basics of business yet, you know?
So. Do you mean that entrepreneurs can't solve the problem of their life but just by making more and making more and making more and getting someone to deal with the back end?
Oh, look, it's crazy, you know? Like, we had a guy on last week. The pod dropped on Tuesday. This guy had never been in business before. He was an accountant from Melbourne, making 150 grand a year as an accountant. His wife comes home one day and says, I want to sell reusable nappies online. 3 years later, he's doing $15 million a year with $5 million net, right? And he'd never been in business. And I said, did you get a mentor? No. I said, how did you learn? I went to Google and I write in how to build a website. He goes, I didn't even know how to build a website. But he said, and I said, how did you find your products? So I went in and I used this data tool and I saw what people were searching for. And then we sat and said, how can we improve what's on the market? It was just this hyper-logical accounting approach to business. Mm-hmm. And he's making $5 million net 3 years later, not turnover. He was on one, he's increased his income by 35X in 36 months, you know? And I don't think he's been to a seminar in his life.
I think there's so much rah-rah in the market, and I think the ability to put your blinders on and actually just avoid the noise that is toxic noise, because it's toxic to your bank account, it's toxic to your faith with yourself, because you start to see other people making it and you start to question why you're not. So I love this story, because a lot of what I'm talking about at the moment is put your blinders on, literally put your blinders on, and the moment you feel yourself being stuck in the scroll, what you are probably doing, if you actually were to witness how you were feeling in that moment, aka having some emotional intelligence about what's going on in your body, I bet that a person would be going down the emotional spiral from peak confidence, and then they'd find themselves potentially at neutral. Hopefully before they get to neutral, they would catch themselves and get off the scroll. But then they would probably find themselves down in the bottom end of the energy spiral, which is not a good place to be. It's where shame, guilt, anger, jealousy, disbelief, resentment lies. And yeah. I think that, like, there's such good stuff coming out on social media. Obviously, you are pumping some gorgeous stuff out on social media. And I think what I'm hearing from what you're saying is the ability to discern the information that is good for you is key in this day and age. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a quote I heard recently, and that is, work instills the worth. So scrolling on Instagram is not work, right? Work instills the worth. So if you want to get fit, you have to do the work. And once you do the reps and once you put in the work, your self-worth starts to grow. When you show up every day, you're casting a vote for your future self, right? When you show up every day. And so I get up, like on my story this morning, I have had this habit. If you follow me, you know this. I post like a little video like that shows the time and the day. And that's how, well, the first thing you see on my Instagram, because I say, here I am at 4:32 this morning, which is when I started today in this spot, in this seat. And I record the quarter of my computer. And I say, I'm doing the work, right? That's the only thing I put on Instagram. It's a 5 second video. And then nothing goes on Instagram until after 9 or 10 after that, because that's my work. So the work instills the worth. And so, business is not Ferraris and Instagram posts and everything else. When you say I'm putting out gorgeous stuff on Instagram, I built a toilet business on Instagram and over the last year.
You're not allowed to go there yet, because I was about to lead into that.
Can lead into it. But that's an example of non-sexy work, right?
Yeah.
So I'll let you take hold of that when you want to bring that up. But that's what's sexy to me is people who are doing the work. And sometimes it means not scrolling, whatever. It's just, yeah. So I'll hand it back to you for that.
That's amazing. Well, what I was about to say, the lead into that is I hear through the grapevine, aka Instagram, that you are in the world's most crappy business. That was going to be my boom. How did you get into that?
Yeah, so look, one of the companies we invested in was a vintage caravan company.
That's right.
Founded by a friend of ours, is a terrific human being, had this passion for those old Franklin-looking vintage vans that are all over New Zealand, Australia. He's a Kiwi. He grew up in one on holidays, you know, with his family. Yeah. And so he's making brand new vintage caravans. They're called Goldie Caravans, named after the Gold Coast. And he said, I really want to do this. I need some money. We backed him. We gave him one of our factories that we own. We said, you can have the factory. The rent is free until you're cash flow positive. That's part of the investment. Then we put a couple of $100,000 to help him get machinery and different things. And I worked there for the first 6 months, most days. And so I named the company, did the branding, did the first sales, took care of all the lead generation for him online. And the first customer that I sold a caravan to, she said, I want a van, but I do not want a chemical toilet. I'm like, okay, now I've never been camping like in a van. So I was like, what's a chemical toilet anyway? And then I looked it up on YouTube and I was like, oh my God, people actually do this. They poop into a toilet that's got chemicals in it. And you just like pour it down a hole. I'm like, this is horrendous. Like I would never do this, but people do. And they pour this poop in a public hole in the ground and just like you see people on the internet gagging while they do it. So this woman said, I will not use a chemical toilet. So I want you to put in this thing called an incinerator toilet, which is a toilet that is basically a cremation oven for your poop. So you push the button, takes 45 minutes and it cooks your poo. And I looked them up and they were $7,000. So I said to her, you know, there's $7,000. She goes, yeah, that's fine. Just add it to the bill. But I want one of those. I'm like, okay. So then I went to order it and the company said, well, what are you doing with the toilets? I'm putting it in a caravan. She goes, no, can't sell it to you because we don't warranty them in a van because there's pipes and gas and they rattle, they move. You can't put it in a van. And I was like, oh. So to bring this customer back saying, look, I can't buy one because they won't warranty it. Plus there's a big vent pipe out the back that needs this much extra space, which we don't have. I'll try to find you another solution. There's an $80,000 caravan sale pending a toilet. So I Googled around and I found this toilet in America. It's called a dry flush toilet. And I was like, this thing looks like the solution. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's patented, yada, yada, yada. And I said to the guy, can I buy two of them? I want one to sell to her and one I want as key to show others. When I got the toilet, I was like, this thing's amazing. And then I contacted him back. I said, have you got a distributor? And he said, we've had lots of inquiries, but nobody actually wants to put up the money to import, you know, a couple of $100,000 worth of toilets. And I want them to do that because there's the consumables that people need. And I only want them sold in a country where the consumables are available domestically. Because obviously if you run out of poop bags, you need to be able to get them. So I said, I would do that if you give me exclusive rights. And he said, done. So I ordered $200,000 worth of toilets and started. Now for me, it was sort of, honestly, it was probably 50% that I wanted to build a business. But 50%, I wanted to show people on Instagram, hey, I'm no longer the teacher. I'm back in the trenches. And I want to show you actually how to build a business, a real business selling toilets. And it was perfect because toilets are not sexy. Nobody's passionate about toilets. And I always used to joke, people get romantic about what they love, like what makes them money. I love long romantic walks to the bank. And so I said, this solves a real problem. Like this is a horrible thing. And for bedside commodes, like people actually care for their partner. And in the morning they get up and they empty their partner's untreated poop into a toilet, scrape it out and then clean it and put it back. Can you imagine? Like, so this toilet, you can use it and then just push a button like a normal toilet, but there's no plumbing, no nothing. You just pick it up, put it by the bed, fully electric. And, just restores dignity. So that's why I did it. And we scale it to $1 million a year in the first 10 months. And it's profitable and it's a great business. And I did it sort of from square one on Instagram so people could see it. And then we did a podcast on it. And then yeah, it's just been a really cool story.
Well, I must admit, I saw your New Zealand distributor plea and I actually showed Christy and I went, honey, I think pooping is funny. Should we reach out? And I want you to know that like I am uncannily interested in this type of stuff, excited about what you're talking about, to be very honest with you. Moving right along, there was something many years ago when I had the good fortune of hanging around you in person, you were mentioning that, I mean, people have said horrible things about you online. One thing that is common between you and I, and you probably outdo me just a little bit in this department, but you've had quite a bit being said about your front teeth, right? And we both have big, gorgeous smiles. Yeah. Your teeth are slightly bigger than mine, I think, maybe.
Definitely.
But people have said horrible things. What is it, picket teeth or something along those lines to you?
Yeah,
you go.
Well, yeah, look, it's funny because one day when you spend a lot of money online and you put your face out there, no matter what you look like, you're going to cop it. But when you've got low-hanging fruit like my teeth, you know, you're really asking for it. We used to spend about $3 million a year on ads and all on YouTube and Facebook. So this face got very known in Australia and New Zealand because that's a lot. Yeah, ads reach 15 million people in Australia. There's pretty much every adult in the country.
Yep.
And one day my staff actually, at my regret that it became humor, they showed me the negative keyword list. So when you run ads on Google and Facebook, if people type a particular word in the comments, you can have it immediately swiped. And they every time somebody insulted me, they added it to the negative keyword list. And they showed me the Adam negative keyword list. And it was quite the repertoire of insults. Aussies and New Zealanders have an amazing ability for. But teeth was one. So, I got a lot of that. And one, I do have massive teeth. Like, that's just how it is. And I had veneers put on my teeth. They were always this big. But before I had veneers, they were stained because of antibiotics that my mum was on when she was pregnant. So the big brown stains across my teeth. So when I could afford it, I got them fixed and I had a gap in the middle. So people didn't know when I smiled at them, whether to smile back or kick a field goal. So I had these massive teeth, but also I worked in the how to make money online business. And so when you work in the how to make money online business, you've been in it as well. Unfortunately, it's a snake pit. Like there is some people, and I would say the minority of people that actually have achieved real results and are teaching from a space of genuinely trying to help people and not just taking the piss. But that's the minority. The other day, sadly, I was in a Facebook group with one of the biggest information marketers in Australia. He runs a community of marketers and he put up, you know, Alex Hormozi is wrong about marketing because Alex says, build a great product and you won't have to be a marketer forever. And he wrote, well, Alex is wrong in our industry. Just be a great marketer because the product doesn't really matter. And half the people won't even log into your course anyway. And I read this and I was just like, this is disgraceful. You know, like this is people's post-tax money that they're giving us for education.
Yep.
At least do them the honor of doing your best around the product, especially when you're a leader. Like I just look at that. But that's the industry, right? And the model became get as many people into the room, don't serve coffee, don't look after your guests, make it as cheap as possible, and then sell. The promoter, you know, gets half of what the person on the stage sells. And so the incentives are sell the shit out of everything, right? That's the incentives. And so it really did a lot of damage in the industry. And I was part of the industry. So rightfully so, people are very, very skeptical of people saying, hey, buy my course to make money online, because 9 out of 10 of those people are not good people. That's in my opinion. With Reliable, we only sold Amazon courses. When it became evident that Amazon was changing, we didn't sell other courses. We wound the company down after 6 years. We never sold the database, even though we had many, many offers. because that was our superpower. And once the superpower wasn't wanted or needed in the same way, we moved on. So that's sort of my, I get why people are criticized. So I don't know if there's other questions in there about that. Happy to talk about it though, if you want.
Oh my gosh. So we've gone from tea to morals is basically what I'm hearing, because a lot of, I completely agree with you, by the way. Brilliant marketing has been used to, in some regards, replace brilliant life-changing programs. And, and I've found myself many, many, many times saying to students, look, here's the deal. Like, you actually do need to learn brilliant marketing, because you can have an incredible, amazing program, coaching, whatever it is. And with crappy marketing, the people with brilliant marketing and the crappy course, they'll outdo you every single day. And they'll be the ones building the community, period. So I said to them, obviously, the ideal is for you to have brilliant marketing and a brilliant online program. So that's a bit different there. So there are a lot of very glum millionaires around in the world. If a person is, and I know this is a bit of a segue, a bit of a tangent, there are people who have quote unquote made it and who have come up and who have perhaps had this understanding that once they quote unquote make it, what their deficiency was in terms of what was making them unhappy will just go, and then they will suddenly become happiness. So with the lens of, there is probably a person or people listening to this right now, Adam, who are looking at you going, this guy's super grounded. Yes, he's got stuff that he's working on. He's happily married. He's living a very fulfilling life. But what can I learn from him? Because I'm not feeling happy at the moment. Like, what, Adam, what would you say to the person that is seeking more fulfillment, more happiness in their life, and who has the financial ability to do so?
Yeah, there's a couple of things there that are very specific, because I've been in this journey myself. The correlation between money and happiness runs out when your basic needs are taken care of. From there on, the correlation between an increase in money and increase in happiness just sort of isn't there. And most people in the West are not that under threat, most people. Mm. Number one, I can really relate to this, because when I was living in Los Angeles, I had an animation company. I lived in LA for 5 years. And I, from the outside, was successful. I had a booming Amazon business. I had an animation company that was crushing, but I was suffering severe anxiety, panic attacks, got hospitalized from them, got agoraphobia to the point where I couldn't leave home for certain times, alopecia where my hair fell out in chunks, like back of my head was like a checkerboard. Wow. And a friend of mine said, you need to go see Rick. And I was like, who the hell is Rick? Said, Rick is a really dear friend of mine. He's a cancer survivor. And he runs retreats in Bali. And they're called Vision Quest. And you need to go over there and do this retreat. And I was like, this sounds a bit hippy dippy. And I was super stressed and so on. So I got over there and I got to this little island off Bali called Lombongan. So you go to Sanua, you go off one island, and then you go to a second island. And then I'm on this little island of Lombongan, and on the first, there's like 8 people at this retreat. And on the first night, I got there a couple of days early. Rick said, let's have dinner together. So we sit down under this sort of rotunda on the edge of the island overlooking the Indian Ocean. And he goes, how you doing? And I'm like, I'm not real good. And I was actually really black, like depressed. This is when all the really heavy terrorist stuff was going on. And it was that John the Butcher who was cutting people's heads off with a bread knife on TV and putting it on YouTube and filming it for everyone. And it really got to me. And I was stressed out of my mind. And so Rick just looked at me and was like, okay. And then he said, all right, let's have a really close look at this salad that's just been put in front of us. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, dude. Like, are you serious? You're going to tell me the answer's in the salad? So yeah, he just sort of said, this salad that you have in front of you, he said, these people over here are friends of mine that run this resort. It's a family. And they were up at 4 this morning over at the markets on the mainland. And so they got all the freshest produce that they could. They picked it all. And they picked it for this morning and also for lunch and for dinner. They brought it across here. And where we're sitting, these logs that are over our head here, these come from the other side of the island. and they were cut by hand last summer, and they were carted here on the backs of trucks and carried on their shoulders across that bridge that you went across, which is quite treacherous, all up here. And it took them about 2 months to lay all this stone, the concrete and this rotunda to give us shade right now. And so, and I guarantee you that in about 5 minutes, she's going to come over here and she's going to ask us how our salad is. And she's really going to care, because this is their life. These people are not going to leave Bali ever in their life. And the only engagement they have with the West is with us and the people who come and stay at this place. And she's going to want to know that we're happy, because that's what makes her happy and brings her joy. So when you really consider all those things, how do you feel about the salad now? And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm looking down, I'm thinking about all the effort that went into me being able to sit there as the white, privileged, rich dude on the edge of this island, being served like a king with a gentle breeze off the Indian Ocean without really any money worries in the world. It really hit me. And he was like, dude, you've just forgotten and lost your way about how deeply privileged you are to have the life that you have. And over the coming week, Rick held space for us to sort of stop doing, stop talking, stop thinking, just shut the fuck up and listen to our inner voice for the first time for me, what was years. And so at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. or whatever it was, pre-sunrise, you would come out of your cabin. There was a candle on a table that was just for you, with one question sitting on the table. And your job was to write your answer and get the pen flowing around that question. And these questions were very, very specifically chosen. And once the pen started and that voice inside had space to talk, it did not want to stop. And it just poured out. Like, and by the end of the week, you've got this masterpiece of a plan and back in touch with who you really are and what your real mission is, because we just don't create the space or have somebody hold the space for us to do it. And I ended up at the end of that first week selling my animation company while I was on that island in Lombongan, you know, for a decent chunk of money. I sold it on a fax machine, because before I left, there was people wanting to buy it. I faxed the broker, said, it's on the market, this is my buy price. By the end of the week, I got two written offers for more than I was asking, signed one, went back to Los Angeles, picked up my check, dropped it in the bank, came home to Australia and bought a place on the beach with some of the proceeds. All of that happened in 7 days of just of that space holding. So number one, gratitude is the hack to joy. And while I was there, I was in, I might show you this because I was just looking at it this morning. While I was there, I wanted to do more with charity. And I had it here. Show you later. But on the plane over, I'd seen this charity that really touched me, which was the blind stuff that we now do. And I went over and met the founder, John Fawcett, who was an Australian from Perth, whose head office was in Sanur, just ironically. And I went and met John and said, I want to get involved, but I want to actually bring people here to Bali to witness the regaining of vision. And John and I had a very, very beautiful engagement together for half an hour in his office. He was covered in skin cancers. I'd never met him before. And I said to him, I'm going to make sure that your work is carried on. And he grabbed my hand, and he'd spent half of his life. He said, you're the one that I've been waiting for. And 3 weeks later, he passed away. And I look back on that time in my life and I'm like, I was so depressed and so anxious and so caught up and so in Los Angeles with multiple businesses going, this overprivileged, stupidly wealthy on a global basis person, entitled, privileged, lost, unhappy, toxic. And then came home and went to Bali, had this incredible experience. And I've gone back since and done the retreat a second time as well. And so that's where I decided to start teaching. And I started Reliable Education soon after, went on to make $70 million in sales of that program that was started on the basis of being in Bali and just reconnecting with my heart. And so the first one, to answer your question, if you're rich and depressed, start counting your blessings and stop being blind to how freaking privileged you actually are, how blessed you are. And I genuinely struggled when Rick said, give me 5 things that you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. I struggled. How embarrassing is that? I mean, that's something to be truly ashamed of, to be born in Australia, to have perfect vision. My worst affliction is I have big teeth. And I'm answering this question in a country where there's 4 million blind people that can't even pay $20 for their child to get eye surgery. Mm. Right? Like, how embarrassing, how disgusting. So I struggled. I was so lost in comparison and going down the scroll, and literally the scroll, but in real life, walking down the street, look at that person, look at that person. I'm all about me all the time, right? And then, so number one is wake up. If you're listening to this, chances are you're listening to it on an iPhone or a computer and you're living in the West. You lucky person, you wealthy person, you blessed person. So that's number one. And number two is don't spend all your money on shit that ends up owning you. The more you own, the more it owns you. That's it, you know? And if you get those two things together and then you do work that's meaningful and you start leading from your heart more, you start stop wanting to control everything and start really living the way that you talked about, that's it. That's as good as life gets. And make it. It's an inside job.
Adam, thank you for pouring your heart out live here for us all to be witness to. I love you. I am so blessed. I feel so grateful to have seen your truth. You've done such amazing, incredible work in the world, and my eyes are tearing up right now. Thank you for making it through. There are people listening to this and watching you right now who will feel called to help you more, to be a part of what you're a part of. How do they get involved in what you're doing and serve you and help you more?
For all that stuff, it's loveheart.org, which is the charity my wife runs from. She formed because she wanted to carry the work on when Reliable stopped. So go to loveheart.org and just connect with them there. The website's only... And she's doing a great job, but it's not fancy because there's no funding. 100% of the money goes to the people of Bali. We basically do tours up there now. So the next one's in May. I'm going to be actually on that tour. There's 22 seats on the bus. It's a $2,050 donation, which covers the bus, the hotels in Java, which is just next to Bali. So we meet you in Bali. We take you across Bali in a bus together. Then we go on a ferry over to Java and East Java. We do a charity tour. And so we spend 2 days in a village, about 3,000 people come down, and about 300 eye surgeries get performed in front of you. We bought one of the hospitals. There's 2 mobile eye hospitals. We raised $250,000 and bought one for them. So you'll actually go into that mobile eye surgery. It's a hospital on wheels in a truck, and you'll see our company on there because of all our community that paid for it. So you'll actually go in, witness eye surgeries being done, have them grab your hands and say thank you. It's the best $2,000 you can ever spend. And the hack is there's 22 entrepreneurs on that bus who have mostly got the heart and the money and the time to be there. So it's an incredible network of great humans. And I'm going to be on the next one in May. I used to go on all of them, but with all the other things going on, and Cass goes on all of them at the moment. So connect with Cass. Just only contact if you can really go and you can really pay, because sometimes people book and I'm going to be, and then at the last minute, oh, something's happened, and then we've got a $2,000 hole in the budget that we have to try and fill, and nobody's getting paid to do all the work that's required to make that happen. It is a lot of work, but that's how you connect.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. Like, genuinely, thank you. I've just opened my calendar. Like, I'm looking genuinely. Am I available in May?
You're lucky.
Oh, I know. I think I'd spend the whole time bawling my eyes out with tears of gratitude, just rolling on down. Hey, again, thank you so much for sharing your heart, because it's very easy to hear the stories of the glory, like the glory stories. It's often in the gory stories that people get the true transformation. So thank you for sharing that, really and truly. Thank you.
My pleasure.
If there's anything else that you feel called, and I'm going to ask you to drop down into your heart again, if you feel called to share with the entrepreneurs listening and watching this right now, they know that they're called. They know they can do the 10, the 20, the 30, the 40, the 1 million, whatever it is. Often the people who are listening and watching this are not just the money hungry, they are the impact hungry people as well.
Yeah.
So if there's anything else that is calling on your heart to share with the people here, and then we'll close it on out after that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think with business, I know there's no shame in wanting to be a millionaire and make $100,000 a month. Like, first of all, great. I love that they're listening. That's me. For the first 30 years of my adult life, that's what I chased. And you got to go and chase that. You got to win that game to sort of really maybe be in the headspace where I am now. Like, that, you got to go through the journey, right? You got to have the Ferrari to know that you don't want the Ferrari, you know, like, that's fine. Go get the Ferrari, enjoy it, and see if you like it, right? It's a journey to get there. And my advice around business is just very simple. Like Zig Ziglar, one of my guys I listened to when I was very young coming up, he's passed away now. He said, in order to get what you want in life, you just got to help enough other people get what they want. There it is in one sentence, right? And then there's just some basic nuances, like how big is the TAM? How big is the total addressable market? Is there enough people that you can serve at the profit margin that you need to make in order to do it at the level that needs to be done? And quite often people, the market is too small. There's not enough. It's too competitive. You can't differentiate enough to charge what you need to make a decent living. And you just got to be patient in your idea selection. Too many people rush to make a decision about the business they're going to start because they've got motivated and they're enthusiastic. And like Jim Rohn had an argument. So Jim Rohn is a very methodical kind of success coach from back in the day. And Zig Ziglar was the motivation guy. And Zig would go, you just got to motivate people. And Jim would say, no, you've got to educate people. And he'd say, well, what happens if you motivate an idiot? You can't be a motivated idiot. You've got to be educated about the business that you're going into and be really reflective and circumspect and put the ego away, get people around you and go, is this really a good idea? And will people really pay this? And have I got my numbers right? And if there's enough people, total addressable market or TAM, and you have got the product or service right, and people really love it and they really need it, and you have got your numbers right, then your chances of success, and you've checked that with a group of people that you respect, not with other motivated idiots, which is half the problem. They get into a seminar room with other people who have no clue. They're all like, don't say anything positive. Encourage Liz. You've got to make her dream come true. No, you need people who have some experience to say, Liz, it's great what you've done, but you could be off on this assumption or that assumption. But if you do those basic things, you're probably going to be successful as long as you're not lazy, you know? And that's it. But somewhere in there is where people go wrong.
Oh, thank you, Adam, thank you so much for your love, time, heart, gorgeousness today. Thank you. How can more people find out about you? Where do they find you?
Probably the best is go to unemployable.com.au. We're just about to put up a new version of that website. The first one, that's the MVP. But go to unemployable.com.au. We've got a podcast, Unemployable Media. Just search it on anything, YouTube, Spotify, whatever. And that's it. If you want to connect, or my Instagram, Adam Hudson Official, and follow me there.
That's a wrap, folks. Liz and the Kapow team hope you've loved this episode of the Happy Million Show. Please help us to spread this mission far and wide by leaving us a 5-star review with an amazing comment, and be sure to subscribe so you're notified with future episodes. We've got some incredible guests lined up for you to hear from to help you build both a business and a life you absolutely love. Full of fun, freedom, family time, friends, fulfillment, fitness, and other Fs. You can fill in the blank. Subscribe now, and for your daily cup of kapower, head over to lizbenny.com. Come on, you know you want to.